Hello and welcome to the Magic Life podcast, and today I'm with Jazz. And Jazz is a new resident to Magic Life. Say hello, Jazz.
Hello.
How long have you been with us now?
Just over 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks yesterday.
Yeah.
So I moved in on the 23rd of July, and I've really settled and I'm really happy here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you living in a supported accommodation prior to coming here?
No, I was staying in a mental health hospital. I was in a ward for a while, and then because of my autism, they put me in a 136, which is like where the police section you and put you in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there for 2 weeks. It's just a bare room, really, with a shower and that. But it did help me because of the noise and everything.
Yeah. Does loud noises affect you?
Sudden noises can affect me. I like watching telly quite loud, and I like my music a lot. So it just depends what it is, really, I suppose.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about your early life. Where did you grow up? What area did you grow up in?
So I originally grew up in Crowbeck, East Sussex, and then I moved to a little village called Rotherfield when I was a bit older, when I was about 9. And I basically grew up there, and I lived right in the countryside, and I had a really good childhood. The only downside to my childhood is that I got heavily bullied at school, which definitely damaged my confidence a lot, but I feel like I've got it back now. And if someone would say something nasty to me, I feel like I could say it back now and like stop them. So I feel like Magic Life has helped me to be more confident.
In such a short space of time?
Yeah, definitely.
How did they do that? Just by talking or?
Yeah, and because when I was in hospital, they sent staff down to see me to get to know them like twice a week. And they would come and talk to me, and they would got to know my routine and what I did in the morning and stuff like that. And it was easier to move with having that little support before I moved.
Yeah.
And I had a transition leave. So it was a 3 week period where they would come and get to know me. And then on the 23rd of July, I moved to Magic Life.
Right. So when you say you have autism.
Yeah, I've got autism, ADHD and EUPD, which is emotionally unstable personality disorder.
And how does that manifest itself in you? How does it affect you?
Well, my autism affects me when people upset me or busy areas and large crowds. I also get quite paranoid sometimes. Sometimes I think people are talking about me when they're not, which might be related to my childhood. My personality disorder affects me where I go into a high and I'm really happy and I'm on top of the world, and then the next minute I'll just crumble, but I'm managing it better now, which is good.
So have you had any help with how to cope with it?
I did a course called STEP, but I didn't finish it because I was getting unwell again, but that's to do with UPD. And I also went to a charity place called Thinking Well, which was in East Sussex in Lewes. And it was activities and stuff, and also meetings about EUPD, which really helped me and helped me understand my condition more, which was really good.
Do you find it helped?
Yeah, it did help. It was lovely to meet all these people that are like me, because a lot of my friends don't have EUPD, and meeting people that have it is quite nice.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like I'm not alone.
Yeah. So do you think that when you didn't know what EUPD was, you felt a little bit more what's wrong with me, or why do I feel this way, or?
Yeah, and once I got diagnosed with EUPD and researched it, I actually realised that basically everything I was doing like texting constantly people, wanting to borrow money, etc. I realised, oh, I've been doing that, that's my UPD. And then I realised, because I did get obsessed with one person when I was working, and I would constantly text her, and then I realised when I got diagnosed that actually that was me getting unwell.
Yeah. So do you know when you're getting unwell? Do you feel it? Do you feel yourself sort of spiralling down or getting manic sort of behaviour?
Yeah, I do. I get very depressed and feel like very suicidal at times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can be like that, and then the next day I'll be completely happy and fine, and it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
So in that respect, yeah, I do feel like it's a hard one, because EUPD is always kind of diagnosed before that thing for autism, which I want to raise awareness of, because I got tested for autism when I was young, when I was about 6 or 7. My mum privately paid, and she said, I don't have autism, but a lot of teachers thought I did, and a lovely teaching assistant who I still am best friends with today, that I reconnected with on Facebook. She's lovely, her name's Sharon. And she knew that I had autism, like she could tell, and she's worked with autistic people, and a lot of people could tell. My cousin Katie said, I knew you had autism straight away. She was like, I've always known. So yeah, basically, I used to stim a lot when I was excited. So what I would do is I would like put my hands like under my chin and like wiggle them when I was happy, and my two brothers would make fun of me, mm-hmm. because they didn't realise what it was, and they thought I was just being silly, and they would mimic it. But it was actually my autism undiagnosed, which made childhood difficult, and it also made me feel like the odd one out, and I didn't have many friends. But growing up now, I've got nice friends that really care. A really good family. I want to do a little shout out to my parents, because they're amazing, Julie and Joe. They're the best parents. They sacrifice a lot for me and do a lot for me. So I really do appreciate them. I'm blessed, I really am.
Do you have a lot of contact with them?
Yeah, they come and see me most weeks.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's actually coming on Friday to stay a few nights, which will be nice.
Mm-hmm.
My mum's struggling a bit at the moment, with her alcoholism, which mm-hmm. she's in recovery for, which is, I want to point out, is an illness. It's a disease, unfortunately. It's more than just an addiction, which I want to raise awareness of as well, that people that are addicts, they're addicts, but they're unwell as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realise that with my mum until I realised when she hit rock bottom, and I realised, yeah, this is an illness.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had that to deal with, which was stressful, but mum's in a much better place now, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also helping me to know that she's okay, and I'm one of those people that will always care for other people before myself. Like, if I see a homeless person, I won't just walk away, I'll stop and I'll buy them something
mm-hmm.
to eat. Like, I'm one of those people that like to give back.
Yeah.
And especially if someone gives you something, I will try and give them something back.
Yeah.
So I think I'm quite a caring person, really.
It is a caring trait to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I picked up something. You said you used to go to work?
Yeah, so I've worked in 3 different jobs, and I've also volunteered. My first job, I was 16. I worked in a little local bakery. But my autism, it was too much for me, so I had to leave suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I didn't realise I had autism at the time. I think I got diagnosed with autism about 2 or 3 years ago, so I must have been about 22 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked at the bakery, and then also, then I worked, I had a very depressive episode when I was 17 in college, just after I finished secondary school, I think all the bullying and all that just got on top of me, and the big transition, all that, just made me really depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very unwell. I was self-harming a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I was going to minor injuries and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I managed to get better, and I came off medication on my own because I knew it wasn't helping. And I know people say don't come off it like that, but I did, and it actually benefited me because I felt more awake, I mm-hmm. felt more positive, I felt like I wasn't being like walking like a zombie, like drugged up or anything.
Yeah.
And I got a little job in a cafe, and I was there for about a year, but the managers weren't very nice to me and treated me really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I didn't know, like I said, I had autism, so I worked a little differently than the others, and they used to like laugh at me, and it wasn't nice, so I left. And then I didn't work for a couple of years, and then when I was 19, I worked in a large supermarket in Heathfield, one of the biggest co-ops, and I started as a baker, and then I moved up to doing everything. I was on the tills, I did the announcements on the microphone. I stocked up items. I was on the till. I was doing everything, really, doing the kiosks, selling like cigarettes and that. And I was doing really well for myself. And then it all just came crashing down.
How did it come crashing down?
Well, I started a birth control patch just because it would help my mood.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to try that, and so I did, and I read on the instructions, could cause depression, and I remember laughing to my cousin saying, imagine if this happened again.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of the blue, it did happen again, which really shocked me, and I started getting very depressed and obsessed with people. I was very obsessed with this, my friend, my old friend, and I just literally just got worse and worse, got more anxious going in to work, but I would always show up. And then one day I went to the doctors and I told them about my mental health. I booked the appointment on my own. I didn't tell my parents. And then I was put on sertraline, which is an antidepressant. And basically it didn't really work. It made me a lot worse. And it also gave me a lot of physical problems,
mm-hmm.
Such as like feeling really, really tired and having nausea and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at work and I had to leave, and like I started at 6 a.m. and then I had to say I have to go home because I felt too unwell physically. And then after a little while, I just got so anxious, and then we had this big Christmas party, which I was really getting stressed about for months because I'm not good with big crowds. And because of that, I ended up drinking very, very heavily and turned up there very drunk. And I was saying really embarrassing things. And then I woke up and felt so embarrassed and guilty. And it was really embarrassing going back into work the next day. And people were like laughing at me, and I think they were joking with me, but I just felt so embarrassed that I just couldn't take it anymore. And I finished that shift, and then after that, I went back to the doctors and just called in sick because I got a sick note. And then from there on, I just had to keep giving sick notes. And then after a while, I realised I couldn't return because it was getting worse. So I eventually had to leave for good. So I didn't really get to say goodbye to anyone because it was a sudden leave,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not proud of, but obviously I couldn't really help it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and they did call me for like a meeting about why I'm off,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have any experience in like mental health,
mm-hmm.
and the manager was like, why, what do you think's caused this depression? Why are you depressed? And it's like, you don't just catch it like it's a cold or something. depression is an illness, and people need to realise that right now.
Yeah. So you left there, right? You didn't go back. Yeah. And then what happened then? Did you start sort of spiralling down?
Yeah, pretty much. My self-harming got a lot worse. And then...
Is that the cuts on your arm? Is that how you self-harm?
Yeah, and I would also swallow, like, foreign objects and...
Explain that to me.
So I was in hospital.
Yeah.
I got sent to a psychiatric hospital the first time when I was 21. I got sectioned.
Yeah.
I did go informally when I was 19, but only for like a day because I was really scared of the noises and everything, and I'd never been anywhere like that before.
Yeah.
But when I was 21, I did get sectioned for the first time, section 2, which is up to 28 days. And I was so scared, but then when I got used to it, I realised I made the most loveliest friends that really care.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you have mental health problems, you care because you understand people and you really care for someone else. So I did that, and I was in there. And then after that, I was okay for a little while. I remember going on holiday to Disneyland Paris, and then I did self-harm when I was there, and then I realised I can't really control it. And
What leads you to do it?
Well, the cutting started when I was about 15, and it got really bad when I was about 16, 17, but I stopped, and then when I was about... 1920, I started again, and I feel like if I cut myself, it's like a release.
Yeah.
Like the chemicals in your brain, like, and everything in your head is so full up with all these emotions that you just like want to do something to yourself physically to let the emotional pain out. And I know a lot of people that have said the same to what I'm saying, and it really does. And a lot of parents get quite shocked about it at first. Like, my mum was very shocked and she didn't know what to do. And I remember hearing my dad cry, like, really bad. And I've never heard someone cry so much before. And that's when I knew this is serious. But I was in hospitals, in and out, like a revolving door for a long, long time. I'm 25 now, and that I've spent 3 birthdays in hospital.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will be my first birthday out of hospital. It always seems to end up on my birthday that I'm in hospital.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's like the anticipation of the birthday starts?
Don't think it's that. It's just what has happened, and the hospital stays can be quite long sometimes. Like, I was in a 136 suite for over 9 months, which is, as I said, it's like a police section where it's a big room.
Yeah.
And so I had no socialisation with any other people apart from the staff. So I had no communication with the other service users. And I like to call them service users, and I call myself a service user because I don't feel like I should be called a patient all the time because it makes me feel bad about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I call myself a service user.
I don't use that word.
Do you not?
No, I use resident. This is your home, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, when I'm in like a hospital or something,
yeah,
I'll call myself a service user then.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm a resident here.
Yeah, this is your home now.
Yeah, I know.
And I can see, I mean, I haven't met you, but you sat before, but from, you know, listening to your past story, it sounds like you're quite settled now.
Yeah, I am. It took a little while. My dad stayed for a few nights, and then I was getting a bit, like, clingy to want them to stay because I was in another placement in Guildford.
Yeah.
That didn't work out.
What does your dad say about you living here?
My dad loves that I live here. He thinks it's really lovely. He loves all the staff. He thinks I'm being really looked after.
Right.
And something that really inspired me that my friend Tanya said, who I looked after when she was poorly in hospital, I kind of took her under my wing. And basically, she said, "It's your time," which those words really stuck with me. It's your time, which really means a lot, because it means like, this is your time. You've earned this all these years in hospital, and you finally get your freedom and happiness. That is exactly right. It's my time.
I agree. So looking to the future, what do you want to do with your life going forward?
I'd like to be a peer support worker in mental health.
Yeah.
And possibly autism. Because I feel like I could help a lot of people. I've been in and out of hospitals for 4 years, which is a long time, and I've literally gone home and then the next day be sectioned and go back.
Yeah.
And that's like, I'm literally like, I was just getting sectioned constantly. I've been sectioned for like over 20 times.
Right.
So they would just, because I would do very dangerous stuff, like I wouldn't just cut, I saw someone else do swallowing things.
Where did you see that?
In a psychiatric hospital in Eastbourne. And I heard her talk about like swallowing, and I'd never heard of it. And then when I was in the hospital in Worthing, one day I just picked up a pound coin and swallowed it.
Right.
And then from there it just spiraled out of control, and I was really, really bad. Like, I'm not going to go into detail, but because I don't want to trigger people, but I was swallowing dangerous objects, sharp objects. And then my worst one, it was a suicide attempt. I actually swallowed a 7-inch kitchen knife.
Really?
And that's the worst thing I've ever done.
What happened then?
I don't even know how I managed to do it, but I did. And I was rushed into resus, and I was fighting for my life, basically. And I remember this, and I'll always remember the doctor coming to my dad and saying, "Can we have a chat?" And basically, he told my dad, basically, she might not make it. And then when I realised what I'd done and how bad it was, and then being rushed to London, I realised, oh God, I've really done it now. Like, I could die. And when you're in that stage where you feel like you're going to die, you don't want to die. Like, you don't want to die. I never want to die. I just want the pain to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you get desperate and you do try and end your life, it's not always because you want to die. It's because you can't see any way out.
Yeah, I get it.
So that's basically what I did.
How did they get the knife out?
They had to operate on me. So I've got a large scar across my stomach, down my stomach, which I've had 3 operations on before. Well, 3 operations in total on my stomach for swallowing objects. Actually, I think I've had 4, a lot. And I've had a lot of endoscopies and stuff like that to remove things. A lot of us have gone on with self-harming, and it was getting worse and worse, and I was having stitches and stitches and stitches. And I was like going in every evening, and it's always evening that made me feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been like that, even now, like, but to be honest, even now, I don't struggle as much as I used to with evenings, because, like, I chat to the staff now and I do stuff, and I actually occupy myself, because I wasn't doing much when I was living with my parents, because we lived in the middle of nowhere, so there was nowhere to walk to. It's just the main road.
Mm.
And I felt very isolated. So now being in Magic Life and walking to Bishop's Orford Town is lovely. And I love going there every day.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You know, when you start feeling like you want to self-harm, does it come very suddenly, or is it a progressive build-up?
It can be a bit of both. So I hear voices but I don't actually hear them much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to hear them very badly and also hallucinate and see things that weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember calling my character Frank, that I called them characters, and it was very scary. And what was...
Well, my question is I'm trying to find a way of coping with self-harming. So if you felt that it was coming along, so look, I don't feel good here, you know, I feel like I want to self-harm or I want to do something silly, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know that's coming?
Yeah, sometimes. So if I do know it's coming... Yeah.
What do you do?
I used to do nothing and shut myself in my room and cope with it on my own and then end up doing something.
Yeah.
But now I actually come out and reach out and talk to the staff.
Do you say to the staff, say, look, I feel like I'm going to do something silly, I don't know why, but I need to talk?
Yeah, so the other day, a few days ago actually, I felt like cutting myself, but then I went to Miriam, who's one of my staff, who's lovely. I told her that I felt like self-harming, and she went and got the manager and we had a little chat. And I have to say, Joan is such a lovely manager at Magic Life. And also, I wanted to thank especially my ward manager on Maple Ward in Meadowfield, Worthing. Her name's Ivani, and she's an amazing ward manager. She used to nurse me because I've been there several times. And she's the only one that really understood my autism,
mm-hmm.
and actually taught me about autism.
Yeah.
And she also did something really amazing, which was a positive behaviour plan. So if I did positive behaviour, I'd get something back or something given to me.
Yeah.
And it really helped set boundaries to me and really helped me.
Yeah.
So I want to say a massive thank you to Ivani for that. So she's amazing.
Do you continue with that positive behaviour plan? Do you make your own one up?
I don't, but I can remember it in my head,
mm-hmm.
and I know what to do when I feel like upset now. I don't just reach out to do something. I actually like distract myself. Like, I love music. I sing and play ukulele. I've always loved music, and I feel like music is really good for people with autism,
mm.
and it's always helped me ever since I was little. So that's a big part of my life, and I really enjoy.
Have you ever thought about writing it down? Put it on the wall, write your positive behaviour plan down, and maybe put it on the wall or something, or where you can read it and say, okay, I feel like I'm doing that. Maybe I should. Well, step one, go and play the ukulele or whatever. I don't know what the positive behaviour plan for you is.
I haven't, but I feel like now you said that I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be a very good thing to do. Because
in the moment, you might just start getting, you know, down a little bit and it might not come to your mind. But if you know that you have an area where you can look at that plan and go, OK, I think I'm experiencing this, let me try that.
Yeah, my bedroom's my safe space, so I know that if I go in my room and, like... Because I like arts and crafts and I knit on a knitting loom. So I knitted a scarf yesterday when it was raining because I thought, what am I going to do? I can't go out because it's pouring with rain.
Yeah.
And then I thought, right, I'm going to do this. So I spent the whole day doing that and it really occupied me.
Yeah.
It's also difficult having ADHD because it makes you, like, you can't focus on something for very long. You have to stop and have breaks, which made it very time-consuming. But... Yeah, it does affect me a lot, so...
So you said you like knitting, yeah?
Yeah.
You got a machine to do it with?
It's like a knitting loom. So do you remember, like, loom bands and that?
No, I don't know what they are.
They're like little elastic bands you can make bracelets with.
Right.
And it was like a loom, so it's like a plastic, like, long rectangular thing.
Yeah.
And you just, like, put your wool on it and then hook it over the top to make stitches.
Get you.
To make the scarf. And I just make stuff.
So you got your knitting, you got your music, your ukulele.
I used to do pottery, which I might get back into soon, because I do have a lot of clay with me.
Do you do it on that wheel thing, or do you just do it with your hands and make something?
I do it with my hands. I did a pottery course
last
year, so I learnt a lot from that. And what was also, when I was in hospital, I did a portrait.
What, drawing or painting?
Sketching. And I'll show you when we finish this, but it's one of the best things I've done, because I never thought I'd be able to draw very well. And I'm still not good at drawing, but this portrait that I did was quite good, and I'm going to hang it on my...
What is it of?
It's a piece of the ocean with, like, the beach and the sand and the seagulls.
Why did you draw that?
Just because it made me feel at peace.
Yeah.
And it was nice and relaxing, so... I did that when I was in one of my hospital admissions, and that really helped me. So all arts and crafts and like music, all that kind of stuff helps me. And I'm actually looking at joining a performing arts group in Grove House, which is just down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully start next Monday, doing performing arts in the evening.
Yeah.
Because it will give me something to do in the evening, especially if I start to feel a little bit low.
Yeah.
So I do try and fill up my day with stuff.
Yeah. It sounds like you've got a lot of hobbies.
Yeah.
A lot of hobbies. Out of all of those, which one stands out most?
Music.
Yeah.
I've actually written a song before, and it's on YouTube. And
have you?
Yeah. It's called... If you type in Jazz Fahy on YouTube.
Jazz Fire?
Fahy, F-A-H-Y. Fahy,
okay. Is that your full name, is it?
Yeah, Jasmine Fahy, I like to be called Jazz, so it's Jazz Fahy on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's called Magic Spell, and it's a really nice little tune that I made. And
what's it about?
It's about how I felt when I was depressed. I'll show you after this, the video. It's very raw, and it's very, like... all my emotions just poured out into this song.
Yeah.
And it really was raw and really, really relatable.
Does it help you getting it out?
Yeah. I write my stuff down and make them into songs.
Yeah.
And then I can play the song and then feel better. So that really helps.
So it sounds like you're taking some of that negative energy that you feel sometimes and then try and turn it into a positive. You know, you're like, I want to get this negative energy out of me. So instead of maybe self-harming, where you might feel that's a way to express your negativity, you could maybe express it in your drawing or in your music, say, and you're releasing that tension out. Say, I'm going to write a song or write some words or paint something or draw something to express how you might be feeling.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like when I help people that are struggling, it definitely is very rewarding. I threw a party for my neighbours wearing an Indigo because unfortunately Indigo's dad couldn't make it to see her. So I decided I'm going to make her day special.
That's lovely.
So I bought a little present, and then I also threw a party. I bought some snacks and drinks and soft drinks, obviously, and put them on the table and invited them in and put music on, and they had a really good time. They were jumping up and down, dancing, and it was great.
Would you do me a favour?
Yeah.
All right. You know we do the Magic Life magazine.
Yeah.
And that was its original intention. It was just to show... our different locations where, you know, we have our residents there, and they can share their experiences and their stories and what they've been doing out, so you feel connected, everyone feels connected in a way. So, oh look, you know, Fred's done this, and Jazz has gone out to the zoo or whatever, and you can share those experiences. But we could also use it for you to showcase your art. You know, we could say, look, this is a piece that Jazz made, and the reason, what it's all about is she likes calm scenery or beach scenes or trees or whatever it may well be, or sunflowers, whatever, you know, whatever your art is, and we'll put it in a magazine and you can share it, and if you like, you can write about it as well.
Yeah.
I'd love you to do that for me. So would you do a bit of drawing for me and then send it to me?
I'm not the best at drawing, but you could borrow my art or take a picture of my artwork that I did previously.
Yeah, I'm asking for you to do something that is unique for you, and you can, if it's up to you.
I might write a song.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah. Write some lyrics and then maybe we can come and record it if you like.
If you want, you can record my song that is on YouTube.
Yeah.
Called Magic Spell. I'll show you.
Can you play it?
It was a long time ago, so I can't actually remember all the chords.
Yeah.
But,
because I think that'd be a great thing. You know, you got a way to put something out there for you, you know, to showcase your amazing talents and skills.
Yeah,
and share how you feel to other people.
Yeah, I can play it on my telly.
Yeah, cool. We'll do that later. I'm just saying, in for future stuff, you know, if you ever feel like you want to put some art there.
I do want to share my song because I feel like it will help a lot of people.
All right.
It's very relatable and it really came from the heart.
Okay.
So that's
on the next magazine. We've got two magazines. One's a printout, like a print magazine, which I gave you just now. Yeah. And we also have a mobile app one, right?
Okay.
And I can put that song in there and we can, you know, put it in the magazine for everyone to enjoy and share, you know, and listen to you. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would, definitely. Yeah,
that'd be nice.
I would like it to go on YouTube, though.
It's on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh, that's
It's in
good.
A magazine, but we embed the YouTube video within it. So it's still coming from YouTube.
Oh, I'd love that, yeah.
So you don't have to, I'll search it or you can send me the link and I'll embed it in the magazine.
Yeah,
so you can see it.
I'll let you watch it later.
All right, that'd be great. I'd love to see it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'm really interested in you moving forward, you know, and you doing good stuff. And it sounds like you're in a place to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for that.
I feel like I've definitely got my independence here. The staff have been more than welcoming. They're really, really kind and caring, and some of them have made little mistakes, but just their learning. Like,
of course, yeah, everyone makes mistakes from time to time.
Like, I'm learning to connect with the staff and trust the staff. They're also learning to connect with me.
Yeah.
So it's like a two-way problem. And also something I use when, if I feel like I'm going to do something bad, I made this up myself and I call it the Wayne scale.
Tell me about it.
So this is what I came up with and I call it Wayne scale. So there's one scale and another one. And there's one saying, I want to drink or I want to self-harm.
Right.
And then the other Wayne scale goes up and says, actually, let's go and talk about these problems, like, what's the good things and what's the bad things about it? What's going to happen if you do this? And then I realise what's going to happen and then I don't do it. And I always picture like a Wayne scale in my mind and that really helps me.
So you make the choice internally whether this is a good or bad choice based on your scales?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the scales always go to positivity, yeah?
Mostly, yeah. They have been.
Because I suppose the negative side of it means that you hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And you self-harm. And there's no good point from there, is there really?
No, today's actually a week incident free, which is really good.
That's amazing.
So I've really settled here and I feel like it's my home and they're kind of like a little family to me now. So, and I didn't feel like that at my last placement and a lot of time, but I feel like this is the right place for me and it's definitely very nice.
You know, you mentioned earlier about positive planning.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you just mentioned to me that you haven't self-harmed in how long now? A week?
Yeah.
Right. So, if we wrote down a progression plan, right? So, right, 1 week, if I don't do that, I'm going to treat myself to a currant bun, let's say, right? And then, if I do 2 weeks, I'm going to treat myself to, two currant buns or a pair of trainers or whatever it may well be.
But That's a good idea.
We list it out on a bit of paper, right? So your end goal, right, I would imagine, is that you'd never want to self-harm again.
Right? Yeah.
That's the end goal, isn't it? But if we envisage from where we are now,
my end goal is to live independently without support.
Right.
And live closer to my parents.
All right. So that's the end goal, right?
Yeah.
So let's keep that in mind. End goal is live independent and close to mum and dad.
Yeah.
Right. But we've got little ways to get there yet, haven't we?
Yeah. Right.
So that in your mind at the moment might be a long way away, right? So let's do little steps to that journey. So we'll do it by week. So first week, we're not going to do any self-harming, right? Because you don't want to do that anyway, do you?
No.
Right. Second week, right? If you get to week two, right, which you will, yeah, I'm going to treat myself to something special, right? And then...
I actually did that yesterday.
Go on, what did you do?
So one of the lovely staff, Issa, said, I said to him, as I was kind of joking, like I wasn't like expecting like gifts, but I said as a joke, if I'm incident free all day till the evening, you have to buy me my favourite drink, which is Fanta Grape.
Right, okay,
and
done.
And I was good all evening, and then I got it, which...
Cool.
Which is...
Because we have to have a reward, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely helps, especially with autism.
Yeah.
Autistic people, it helps them to like, or people with learning disabilities, it helps them to reach that goal. And sometimes it can be a small goal, but I feel like all goals and all wins, they still count.
Of course.
No matter how small they could be. Like, for instance, I could drink a can and not crush it up and I'd feel like happy and proud.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could like use a razor and give it back without hurting myself. And mm-hmm. they're all little wins. And I've definitely matured a lot and got very confident, independent with magic life.
Cool. So should we write them down? So what's your immediate goal? Give me a goal for next week. You've already given me the first goal that you didn't self-harm this week. What's your next goal? It to two?
Yes. And also...
So if you get it to, when you get to 2 weeks, what are you going to get? What sweets do you like?
I'm not really a sweet person. I might get myself like a milkshake or something.
Right, okay. So week two, or milkshake. Pasta. Yeah? Right, what are we going to get for week three?
My mum used to do this with me as well. She's like, if you can do this, I'll buy you this.
Don't think we should buy it. I think you should treat yourself.
Yeah, that is true, yeah.
Right, because then you're dependent on someone else.
And that's true, yeah.
What I think is that you should reward yourself because you're doing it for yourself. It's not for other people to reward you.
No, self-care is really important. Yeah.
I think you're a wonderful person.
Oh, thank you.
Do you think you're a wonderful person?
Yeah.
Good.
I didn't used to be proud of myself, but as I've grown older and realised all the things I've been through, I feel like I am definitely a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have scars, and that shows I've been in a battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I call them my battle scars because I have dealt with a lot of things in my past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped me to be who I am today, even though they were negative. And
are they important to you?
They are, because they're an important reminder that I'm still here and I'm here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have been born if I wasn't here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was obviously on this earth to do something, so mm-hmm. I definitely, like, I don't ever want to ever put my family through any of this again.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live and I want to be happy. I never want to try and end my life again.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Ending your life's pretty fine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually coming up to one of my friend's 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
Who sadly committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel?
The feeling was just that I felt empty, like someone had taken a piece out of me. And I could feel my stomach hurting and I was just crying my eyes out. It was such a shock to find out. I found out online on social media, so it was quite upsetting.
Mm.
And it's actually one of my friend's birthday is her heavenly birthday today,
mm-hmm.
who also committed suicide.
What would you say to her if she was here now?
Which one?
A friend who's in heaven now.
I've got two. Well, I've got three. Four.
The one we were just talking about.
So Robin, who was transgender. Well, tell her it wouldn't last forever and you've got this.
Are you angry with her?
No.
No?
No, because they didn't do that to hurt or destroy your life. They did it because they're in a great deal of emotional and mental pain.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to her now?
I would say you were gone too soon, but please look after me from above.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll always think of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know her aunt. I'm friends with her auntie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a lovely friend that I sadly lost called Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And he meant a lot to me. And unfortunately, I didn't find out until a long time after he died because I didn't talk to him, but I did message him and he wasn't answering and I didn't think anything of it at the time, but then his mum actually unlocked his Facebook and messaged me on there and then I realised,
mm-hmm.
and it felt like crushing and I was so upset.
Mm-hmm.
But my biggest upset was when my dog died.
Yeah.
And he was my absolute world. He's called Lenny. I've got the tattoo.
Oh. What did Lenny die of?
We got another dog and we got a Springer Spaniel. And as a puppy, they were play fight. Lenny was five and he basically grabbed Lenny's collar when they were play fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it suffocated him.
Oh, poor thing.
So that really threw me because I did absolutely everything with him. I devoted my life to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd walk him, I'd feed him, I'd buy him stuff, buy him toys, I'd take him to get groomed, I'd do everything with him. We were inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
So it was horrible. And I actually found out when I was in a psychiatric hospital the day after my birthday, he mm-hmm. died,
yeah.
which was very upsetting. But I feel like he's looking down on me, and also my nan died recently. It was her anniversary of 2 years.
Yeah.
And I feel like my nan is always looking down on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went to a Sunday church service mm-hmm. Last Sunday
mm-hmm.
for my nan because she would go every Sunday. So I thought I'd go in her footsteps. And I've never felt such peace than going to church.
Why did you feel the peace?
It was just so relaxing and everyone was so friendly and I realised this is a really nice community to be in.
Yeah.
And I feel like the reason why I went to the church is because after I had that really bad suicide attempt, it was definitely a wake-up call. And all these attempts that I've done, and a lot of them were life-threatening, it made me realise there must be someone looking down on me, saving me.
Mm-hmm.
There must be someone, like, saving me from this.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, I don't know, I'm fully religious, but I feel like there is a God that has saved me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go to church again on Sunday.
That's good.
And just see how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's nice to meet new people.
Yeah, of course it is.
So, yeah, and I might even, in the future, start a Facebook autism group in mm-hmm. Bishopsthorpe.
Yeah.
Where we can just all be together with all people with autism or parents that have autistic children or waiting to be assessed. And I can be a bit of a peer support worker and like tell them what to look out for and stuff like that, basically.
Yeah, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you think about there's a higher power trying to keep you safe.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about you keeping you safe?
That's a hard question. I feel like now I can, but in the past I didn't. But now I've kind of matured, because I was told when I was younger, you don't fully mature until you're about 25, which I am now.
Yeah.
And because I've matured a lot, I see things differently now. And I think, oh, yeah, I need to look after myself. I deserve to look after myself.
You do.
And that I feel like I deserve it now. And as I said before, it is my time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very powerful words that I'm going to remember in my head.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a song there.
Maybe.
Be a good one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's my time.
I'm already thinking of the lyrics in my head.
It's my time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a good song.
Yeah, I might actually, I'm gonna do that.
You've got lots of great ideas.
Yeah.
Lots of great ideas. So what we need to do is make those ideas reality.
Definitely.
Not just talk about them. So
just like when you say sorry, you need to show an action, not just say it.
Yeah.
So, like,
I was wondering, I was thinking to myself when you said there was higher powers looking after you. I mean, I believe that there was a bigger force than just us here. But I also think, for me personally, I don't know if you think the same, that it's our responsibility, my responsibility, to take care of myself. You know,
definitely. Like,
and when you take that on, you say, look, I'm worthy. I deserve good things in my life, right? And although I may not feel good at the time, I'm still going to take care of myself. You know, because I think if we take self responsibility and then we actually action it, it breeds positivity, I think. I mean, I'm not a therapist or anything like that. I'm not from a medical background. I'm just my own personal experiences about things. But, you know, if I set myself a little goal and I achieve it, I feel good, you know, and I think, oh, I've done something, you know, or if I, let's say, I've learnt a new set of chords on a guitar, you know, I learnt that. I feel good. I can do that now. I've practiced it. I've been doing it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I feel good now.
I feel good. I can play an E minor or a D chord or a C chord, whatever. I mean, I'm saying these little things, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is, but achieving something builds confidence, I think, you know?
Yeah, so...
But we've got to do it, haven't we? Yeah.
For an example, yesterday... my neighbour came with her staff and I had my staff, and there was quite a few people in the room.
Yeah.
And one of them said, play one of your songs.
Yeah.
It wasn't my song, it's a song, it was Riptide by Vance Joy.
Right.
And I sung it and played it in front of everyone. I was like, at first I was like, no, this is a big audience. But I was like, let's just do it. In my head, I always say to myself, sometimes I say it out loud, you've got to be brave.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and I got an applause, and that applause really, like, made me feel proud of myself for what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so positive doing that, thinking, oh, that was so difficult, but I did it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was made informal in hospital, which means you're not sectioned, but you can go out when you want, but right. You have to be risk assessed.
Yeah.
I actually burst into tears of happiness.
Of course, yeah.
So I was so overwhelmed and so happy that I'd finally proven that I can be informal. I probably shocked a few people, because they probably didn't think, oh, she's not going to...
You're not going to make that.
...do it. And actually, even Joan from Magic Life, the manager of Chapel Row...
Yeah.
She said, when I read your notes, I thought, no, this girl's going to be trouble, or we're going to have a tough time. But then she realised I actually blossomed and was very caring. And she said, I never expected the way I saw you in hospital to the way you are now. It's like a different Jazz.
Yeah.
And it really is. If you saw me in hospital a few months ago, you would never think that I would get this far in such little time.
Yeah.
And I just have...
And done well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
You have done really well.
Yeah.
And you're going to continue to do well, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're going to get your guitar for me?
Well, I'm going to play you the song off YouTube
Don't get me your guitar for a sec.
My ukulele?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And I want you to be brave for me now. And you can sing me any song you want.
He wants me to play the ukulele.
Right, we're going to be. I'm going to be nice and quiet.
I need to tune it first.
You tune it then.
Like the positive behaviour. I'm going to do this song and then I'm going to reward myself with a cigarette.
You do that.
That's kind of, even though it's not healthy, it's still a positive.
If that's what you think is positive, thing. That's fine.
Right. So this is Riptide by Vance Joy. Scared of pretty girls and starting conversations. Oh, my friends, they're turning green. You're the magician's assistant in their dream. Oh, ooh. I wanna know when they come unstuck. Oh, lady, running down to the riptide, taking away to the dark side. I wanna be your left hand man. I love you when you're singing that song, and I'm gonna lump in my focus. You're gonna sing the words wrong. Oh, lady, running down to the riptide, taking away to the dark. I love you when you're singing that song. I'm gonna lump in my focus. You're gonna sing the words wrong. I'm gonna lump in my focus. You're gonna sing the words wrong.
Really good. That's amazing. That's really good. How did you feel?
Not good.
Yeah? That's amazing, Jazz. It's yeah. Great. So good. What an amazing voice you have.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's a really amazing voice.
Thank you.
Did you teach yourself that? How to play that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I watched a girl do it when I was 17 on America's Got Talent.
Yeah?
And after that, I just started... my dad bought me a ukulele, a little one for beginners. And I played it, and then I just taught myself. And as I got more experienced, my dad bought me more expensive electric ones. And I do want to start busking at one point in the town.
So many wonderful ideas.
But again, that's quite scary.
Yeah, well, sometimes you've got to do scary things.
Yeah, I know.
It's really good, Jazz. So we're going to come to an end now.
Okay.
So what's your... What message do you want to give out to everyone? What do you want to say?
Never give up and never stop chasing your dreams.
Jazz, thanks very much for giving me your time today. It's been a pleasure having a chat with you.
Thank you.
And we're going to do it again, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jazz.
Thank you.